Entering Kenmore, doors will open on the left.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to episode 5 of Entering Kenmore. I am David Azer alongside Zach Coe. Zach, not a lot of Red Sox news going on lately.
No whole lot of nothing, I would say. It feels like, I know Red Sox Twitter was at a pretty contentious point in the days, or I guess 2 days leading up to the Crochet trade. And it feels like things have only gotten worse from there. The high from getting Garrett Crochet has completely worn off, and now we've settled into the restlessness and kind of the dog days of the offseason here, middle of January. We've got a couple weeks until pitchers and catchers report and a very incomplete Red Sox roster.
Yeah, and not only that, just an incomplete free agency class around the league. There are still so many quality free agents out there that have yet to sign. Obviously, the names that come to mind, Pete Alonso, Alex Bregman, and there's been a lot of smoke throughout the whole offseason with Alex Bregman being linked to the Red Sox. We've kind of just seen more of that. It's just basically been cookie crumbs up to this point. Last time we talked, I'm pretty sure we mentioned that the Red Sox never even gave Alex Bregman an offer. At this point, I don't think that's changed, but we do have more news on that to unpack.
So I don't know if you listened to the last Section 10 or saw any of Karabas' tweets about that. It kind of seems like there's at least a contract offer out to Bregman at this point, but it doesn't sound like it's anything super enticing to him, not to steal a line from Tristan Casas with the nothing enticing, but it still feels like a long shot at this point based on the way that Jared was talking about on the 10 and on Twitter the other day. He kind of, there was a whole thread where people were asking him questions and he was just kind of giving little nuggets here and there, which I do appreciate because I know we talked about it before, but he definitely talks to the player and has a pretty good idea on what's going on. So I'm not super optimistic based on what he's saying and what he's hearing. And now we hear that the Astros have re-engaged with him on that, and reportedly that six-year, $156 million offer is still on the table for him to return to Houston. So I kind of am leaning that's where he's going now.
Yeah, and at this point, it seems like that might be the best offer he's getting. I know when we first got into the offseason, Bregman was rumored to be seeking upwards of a $200 million deal. Obviously, that never came to fruition. I don't think it's anywhere near that in terms of offers. But I know that the Tigers were in. I don't know if they put out an offer or not, but it just seems like at this point, the market is slowly developing for a guy like Bregman, and the Red Sox are just not on the train at all.
No, the offseason actually started with Boris floating the Manny Machado contract
as
that Bregman was looking for, which, like, I understand that's just Boris doing agent talk and doing what Boris does. Like, there was no world where Alex Bregman was going to get the, what was it, like 11 years, $300 million like that Machado got. Yeah. So, like, obviously that was a pipe dream. And that comes into the territory similar to the Bogarts deal that he eventually signed with the Padres of, like, if you're giving him that kind of money, then, like, you're a fucking moron. So, like, obviously that was a pipe dream, but also if you had told me that Xander Bogarts was getting 11 and 290 before he signed, I would have called you a moron then too. So it is interesting. Like I said, if I had to guess, I think he's going back to Houston on that 6-year, $156 million, if that report is true. But it's just the Red Sox have no excuse for him to not already be on the team, which makes it all the more frustrating.
Oh yeah. Then that's the thing is the whole offseason we've been hearing, oh, the Red Sox want to rebuild their rotation. They want to bring in some bullpen help, and the big addition on offense should be a right-handed power bat. Bregman is the epitome of right-handed power bat. And not only that, he's a clubhouse leader, which you desperately need, especially in this locker room full of young kids. And you're bringing up Roman Anthony, you're bringing up Christian Campbell, Marcelo Meyer. At this point, they don't have a legitimate leader. And Rafael Devers, we've heard time and time again, is not interested in being that leader. That is fine. But when you have Jaron Duran as your leader right now, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for the young guys, but with no playoff experience at this point and having a guy like Bregman who has won two World Series, has been to four or five at this point, like, I don't see why a guy who is practically begging you and is being like, yeah, I'm down. Like, I want to come here. If the numbers line up at least enough to entice me to come here, like, I'm all in. I don't understand why they're not even kicking the tires on that.
It really does feel like he's just begging you to be a Red
Sox.
Like,
yeah,
we know the numbers. Like, I have the numbers right here. Career 375, 490, 750 slash line for Bregman at Fenway. Obviously, we know in Houston, he's been playing with the Crawford boxes. So the pull power plays well there. It's going to play well with the monster. And you said it. I mean, I have a whole lot of complaints about one person in particular within FSG, and that's Sam Kennedy. So I'll start to go in on that right now. So he did an interview with Tom Caron and Lou Maloney on Nesson during Fenway Fest, where Lou kind of pitched that exact premise to him, the veteran leadership. He looks out into the – this is Lou saying he looks out at batting practice and Jaron Duran's looking for someone to talk hitting with. And Rafael Devers is just kind of doing his own thing. And there isn't somebody for them to – a veteran whose brain they're going to pick. And that's just what this team needs. And Kennedy pushed back on it and saying, like, well, we have Rafael Devers, who you just said it. He has no interest in being a leader on this team. None. Like, even he might have less than no interest in being a leader on this team.
Yeah.
He makes that abundantly clear. Every single time they talk about Devers as a leader, whether it be Cora or anybody else, says, you know, he's not really interested in being that forward facing guy. And then he said, we have Jaron Duran. He was one of the best hitters last year. And we have Trevor Story, who doesn't play games. Like, and we have one of the best leadership managers in the game, and Alex Cora. Okay, so what you just named are one guy who has no interest in being a leader in Rafael Devers, who isn't an English-speaking person. English is not his first language, and we know that he's not comfortable speaking English. So you want him to talk ball with Jaron Duran? Trevor Story, what do you want him to do? Zoom him when he's at home on the couch recovering from whatever injury he's going to be recovering from? Alex Cora, a career utility man? Like, no disrespect to Alex Cora as a manager. Like, I think he's a top two manager in the league, and he's not number two. So
yeah,
he's a fantastic manager, but in terms of picking your brain to help hit, like, to learn something new, Alex Cora is not that guy. Like, he was a journeyman utility man. So again, nothing against him as a manager, but they don't have that veteran leadership. Remember what bringing JD Martinez into this lineup did for
Mookie,
for Bogarts. You have a professional hitter who's been there, done that. And not only that, I know Bregman's path is a little different to JD's, who's DFA'd and kind of retooled his swing and found himself in Detroit, but it's a guy who's gone through the grind, who knows, comes from a different perspective. First of all, the Red Sox have had the same hitting formula. I mean, people call for Pete Fatsy's job every single year, and he's still here. So just to get a different perspective, a different set of eyes, guys who have different experiences to look at your swing, to look at the way that you're approaching things and say, hey, maybe have you tried doing things this way? Have you tried doing this or that? And it completely unlocks something and takes these guys to a whole new level. So not only are you adding a veteran presence and a bat that's going to post every single day and rake at your home ballpark, but you're essentially bringing in another hitting coach to help all these young players as they adjust to major league pitching.
Exactly. Exactly. And while you were talking about that, I was thinking about the JD Martinez comparison too. That's what got them over the top in 2018. Without JD Martinez, they do not win that World Series. They don't win 108 games. They probably scrape into the playoffs and are bounced in the first round like we saw in 2016 and 2017. Like, it to me, it's not that big of a difference. I think, like you said, the background is different, but the overall message that those players give off, I feel like, is largely the same, especially with such a young core and having no veterans around them that either want to endeavors be a leader or are capable of being a leader in Trevor Story, because he's never fucking on the field. Like, I just don't understand. Bregman has played like at least 150 games in his past four or five seasons. He's always on the field, rarely gets hurt, and he gives you everything that you need. And it's not even a question of going over the luxury tax at this point. You have, like we talked about right before we started, you have like $30 million to play with right before you get up to that luxury tax. And to me, it seems like they're not going to even sniff it at this point.
Not even close. And a great leader, Trevor Story, after, who was it, Cal Quantrill on the Rockies made a jerk-off joke to Reese McGuire, and everyone was ready to go to war at the buses after the game. Who was the one guy, great leader Trevor Story, turning his back on his teammates because he has friends in Colorado? Like, who gives a fuck? Let him go. Like, you have a bunch of guys fired up that he wanted to talk shit about one of their teammates, and Trevor Story's in there playing peacemaker. Like, who gives a shit? Like, honestly, that I don't want to say that completely ruins the image of Trevor Story for me on the Red Sox, because he's done that himself by not being on the field. So it doesn't completely invalidate that, but to be like, oh, we have a great leader in Trevor Story who immediately turned his back on his entire team the first opportunity he got when there was a scuffle is not all that inspiring. And you said it, there's about 30 mil until they hit the luxury tax. And I want to bring up this Sam Kennedy quote from November talking about that luxury tax. Even if it takes us over the CBT, our priority is 90 to 95 wins, winning the American League East and winning the division for multiple years. If you look at this lineup right now, what place do they finish in the American League East this year and multiple years moving forward? Because it might be dead last.
Yeah, it's the Blue Jays and Rays are decimated at this point, but it's 3-5 every year.
Yeah, you're just nowhere near being competitive with the Yankees or the Orioles. And I've been beating the Orioles or fraud drums for the last 2 years. I just don't see it with this core. And they're kind of in a similar place where they're lacking a sort of veteran leadership in their ownership, or not even their ownership. The reports out of there are saying that Rubenstein is willing to spend the money and that Mike Elias just simply isn't willing to shell out the money. So they're in a similar spot as you. And look at what they do. They win 100 games every year and then get bounced in the first round. Like, have they even won a playoff game yet with this Gunnar Adley core?
I don't think so. Or if they did, it was only one.
Yeah, they got swept by the Rangers 2 years ago. And then I can't remember what their series was this year other than that they lost. I think they got swept again.
It wasn't the Tigers, so it would have been the Guardians. Is that right?
Yeah. I think it was. No, the Tigers played the Astros. Let me look it up right now. But they are in a similar spot, but even so, they have their young players up and producing for them and still seeing not seeing the postseason success that's supposed to follow with that because they don't have that veteran leadership. So like for him to say that they're going to contend for 90 to 95 wins in the division and then look at this roster and be like, yep, this is the one that's going to do it. Like, you're an idiot. Like, what pisses me off so much about Sam Kennedy is that he shovels shit down your throat and then goes, what? I'm from Brookline. I'm a fan. I remember coming here with my dad when I was a kid. Like, okay, you might have been a fan at one point and you might have those memories of coming to Fenway and watching games with your dad, but you're no longer a fan. You're an owner of the team, and not only are you an owner of a team, you're a part of an ownership group that is greatly misconnected with their fan base. And not only are they misconnected with the Red Sox fan base, they're disconnected with the Liverpool fan base, because my buddy who's a Liverpool fan, he sent me, you know, the Liam Fennessy raised the banner tweets. Liverpool fans, completely independent of those, are doing their own raise the banner tweets where every report that comes out about Liverpool, they're like, oh yeah, we're like serious aggressors in retaining Mo Salah. Like, it's ridiculous. They're a disgustingly disconnected ownership group. And like I said, Kennedy's the front-facing guy for the Red Sox because he's from Brookline, but it doesn't matter if you're from Brookline if what you're saying is fucking bullshit to the fans.
Yeah, two things to add on that. One, going off of Red Sox and Liverpool, the Penguins are a dumpster fire too right now. Like, didn't they – I'm not a hockey guy, but didn't they just get rid of, like, Tristan Jarry for nothing?
Yeah, they waived him.
Yeah.
They told him he had like 2 hours to pack his bags and he was getting waived, and they're probably going to trade Crosby. They might trade Malkin. They're going to completely blow things up.
Yeah. They're completely gutting that roster of just staples from the past 20 years. Malkin and Sidney Crosby have been on the Penguins since I've been playing NHL games on the fucking Wii. So the other point on Sam Kennedy as a whole is, if he were an actual fan of the team, like he keeps saying, then he would not stand for the state of the team the last couple of years. The main issue has been roster construction and the team just not playing up to expectations. Not only that, the team just is never even expected to make a deep playoff run anymore. And for the last 6 years, he's been beating the same drum and we haven't seen any change. So if he were an actual fan of the team, like he keeps trying to shove down our throats, then change would have happened by now.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I know Coley has been, you said beating the drum, but Coley's been beating this drum since he said it. That luxury tax quote that I read a little earlier about if it takes us over the luxury tax, we're okay with that. Our priority is 90 to 95 wins. It's a sentiment that he then repeated while backtracking that they were going to spend at Fenway Fest. But Coley's exactly right. They only said that because they traded Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom, and then Chris Sale went on to win the Cy Young. He said that the exact same night that Sale won the Cy Young, and Vaughn Grissom did nothing for them. And I know that anybody with a functioning brain or a functioning baseball brain understands that trading Sale for Vaughn Grissom wasn't a deal that was supposed to pay massive dividends in year one. But to trade Sale for Vaughn Grissom, who spent most of the year hurt, and when he did play, he was a net negative for the big league team. I know he was better down the stretch, but for Sale to then turn around and go and have a Cy Young season, it couldn't be a worse look optics-wise for a team that really needs some PR wins. So for him to say that night, kind of take the heat off of, oh, Chris Sale won his first Cy Young. Wonder why he couldn't do that on the Red Sox, especially when we saw the Red Sox pitching staff completely implode down the stretch, get burnt out. Like, I know they'll talk about, oh, well, they made 30 starts. So it's like, okay, well, I could go out there and make 30 starts and have a fucking infinity ERA. Like, it doesn't matter how many starts you're making. If down the stretch when you're burnt out, you're giving up fucking tanks every, fourth batter, like Cutter Crawford was doing, which – that's like another whole issue to address. Like, I don't want Cutter Crawford in the rotation anymore. Like, so I still think they could use another starter that they're not going to go out and get. And like, at this point, who even is the other starter that you're going to go out and get? Everybody's gone. At this point, we're talking about Alex Bregman or like a bunch of fucking idiots that are left out. Like, talk about dumpster diving with Randall Grichuk and Jorge Polanco and like some of these other names out there. It really is Bregman, or you're having like a really bad offseason after this was the year. Like, after this year, I'm done. I don't give a shit. You can tell me whatever the fuck you want to tell me about, oh, we're going to be aggressive in this, we're going to be aggressive in that. I don't give a flying fuck. Go out there and do it. And don't tell me, oh, our goal is to win 90 to 95 games. You might win 20 games less than 95 this year with this roster. And you're going to sit there and say, our goal is to contend for the AL East every year. Well, then go out and do it, because I don't think the Yankees were very good last year with Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. And I think they got better, even though they lost Soto, adding Fried. So, and Bellinger too. So this is a team that it desperately needs to go out and do something, and they just feel perfectly okay with not doing it. Like, at this point, I think it's going to be Christian Campbell and Vaughn Grissom duking it out in spring training for the second base job, which I don't even necessarily have a problem with, because I think if you're signing Bregman, the most logical path is playing him at third base and Devers at DH. But now it comes out that they promised Rafael Devers he would be the third baseman for multiple years. Like, I know I've said it before and I'll say it again. He has 300 and however million reasons to play DH. Like, you got your contract. You're getting paid the money no matter what. And you're a shitty third baseman. You're a poor defensive third baseman. You have a guy that is begging you to be a Red Sox in Bregman, and has also played a gold glove caliber third base. And they're like, well, let's stick him at second and block the number three prospect in baseball, because we promised our shitty defensive third baseman that he would be the third baseman for many years to come. Like, I just don't see the merit in that argument even a little bit. And it almost feels like that's why they're like, sure, Christian Campbell could come up and outperform Alex Bregman, but what he doesn't bring is that veteran leadership that we've been talking about. And I think there's a 0.0% chance that on opening day, Alex Bregman's in the starting lineup for the Red Sox.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the other aspect of this is I'm just so sick and tired of the empty promises. We heard Full Throttle last offseason. We've heard, oh, we want 95 wins this season. We're going to spend big. We don't care about the CBT. And then both offseasons, they've come out and done jack shit. I don't understand it. It just doesn't make sense. Why even make the promise if you're not 100% committed on fulfilling it? I get that Juan Soto is a one-off. Like, you bid $700 million and you missed out because Steve Cohen gave him a blank check. That is what it is. But what's not okay is being willing to commit $700 million. And then when Alex Bregman, who I would argue fills a bigger need than Juan Soto would,
easily.
when he wants significantly less money and is practically begging you, just like we saw Teoscar Hernandez practically begging to come to the Red Sox last offseason, and you didn't sign either of them. It's not looking like you're signing Bregman. You're definitely not signing Hernandez, who's now probably going to be a Dodger for life, and you fucked that up. So at this point, what does that say to free agents? Like, I don't even think this is an ideal destination for people anymore.
No, not even close. And it's because it used to be the Red Sox and Yankees duking it out for every big name free agent because they were the only two teams willing to spend. That's no longer the case in baseball. Obviously, like, I know a lot of people have issues with the Dodgers giving everyone money. I don't have as much of an issue, mostly because I root for a team that could also be doing this. And I understand that it takes two to tango on these deferrals. Like, I'm sure plenty of teams would defer the entirety of contracts if the players were willing to, but that's a credit to the Dodgers for building the type of culture that, like, we talked about it with the Bruins for however many years, not to cross sports, but Bergeron, Marchand, like these guys taking team friendly deals because they're the leaders, and it sets the precedent to other guys. Like, well, if these guys are willing to take team friendly deals, then why shouldn't I be? Same thing with the deferrals with the Dodgers. Like, I do think there needs to be something done because when you look at the contracts with the deferrals, that the luxury tax number is actually smaller because of the deferral. So like Otani's luxury tax hit is only like 30 something million or whatever it may be, which is how they're able to do this. I mean, obviously they're spending at an insane amount, but I think that's where the disconnect really comes from. But like, I don't understand. It's like you were saying, where it's every year it's something. And I mean, it got completely glossed over at the start of last year with Sam Kennedy when he got asked, like, what do you say to fans who think that this ownership group is disconnected and doesn't care about winning? He's like, you're wrong, you're a liar, and I'm going to call you on it because it's utter bullshit. It's like, go fuck yourself, dude. Like, seriously, shut the fuck up. Like, I don't know who you think you're talking to, but fans are the ones that pay your bills. They write your checks. They're lining your pockets. That it just goes back to what we were saying earlier. You might have been a fan at one point in your life, but if you were a fan, then you wouldn't sit there and tell fans to shut the fuck up because they're stupid, because they're using their brains. Like, that's what fans are doing. Like, any fan that says FSG isn't committed to winning, doesn't care about the Red Sox, and doesn't want to spend the money to bring the Red Sox to where they should be as a top three market in the entire sport, is using their brains. So for a member of the ownership group, let alone one that calls himself a fan, to go, you're a liar and it's wrong and it's bullshit and I'm going to call you on it. Like, give me a fucking break, dude. That should be example number one of FSG not being connected with their fans and having a misunderstanding of the fan base. It's like what at the Winter Classic when John Henry was there a couple years ago and he was getting booed, and then the reports out of FSG were like, oh no, John Henry wasn't getting booed. It's like, what the fuck did you think they were doing, John? Like, you were walking around your ballpark. It was before you signed Rafael Devers. Xander Bogaerts had just walked. You just traded Mookie. You took the greatest team in franchise history, and 3 years later, you were a dumpster fire. You are the greatest owner in sports. Like, did you think you just missed that last part, John? Like, no, we don't like you. You are disconnected. You don't care about the team. And then you have the audacity to send your little spokesperson out there and call the fan base liars? Like, come on. I know it's over a year ago, but nothing about their attitude has changed even a little bit. Like, you said it. He said that they're willing to go over the luxury tax this year. Now we're going to be lower in salary this year than they were last year by like 20 million. Like, it doesn't make sense. And it's not fair to a fan base that comes out there, pays the highest ticket prices in baseball, the highest concessions prices in baseball. There's nowhere to park, so you're paying out the ass to park in random parking lots. Like, this is not how you retain fans. This is not how you make new fans. I mean, just look at the Netflix documentary. They take on this big global project. Like, look at F1. How many people do you know that had no idea what F1 was, that started watching Drive to Survive and all of a sudden became huge F1 fans? That's what they're trying to do with the Netflix documentary, and it looks like Tristan Casas is going to be the star of that, and they're like, get this guy the fuck out of here. Like, I don't understand that. Like, every single move that they make and every single thing that gets rumored makes me like wonder more and more what the plan is.
Yeah. Yeah. And man, we have come out on a heater at the start of this episode. I think the icing on the cake was missing out on Tanner Scott. That is another guy who all offseason, really right from the start, you saw Jeff Passan with his offseason primer come out and be like, Tanner Scott is a guy who should fit right in with the Red Sox. And other people came out and said that too throughout the offseason. And then you never hear any rumors, and the Dodgers just snatch him up. And not only that, right after, literally the next day, they went and signed Kirby Yates. So now pretty much all of your good bullpen options are gone. And from the start, you heard ownership being like, yeah, we need to fix this rotation. We're going to get bullpen help, and we're signing a right-handed bat. Well, your bullpen help is gone. Like, we have a list on in our podcast notes. The lowest person on this list is Scott Alexander. And, oh my God, this just pisses me off to even look at. The guy who's ranked number 18 is Hunter Strickland, who you haven't heard about since he literally got into a fist fight with Bryce Harper in like 2015.
Yeah, Nationals Bryce Harper.
I didn't even know he was still in the league. That is who you're dumpster diving for right now to have any bullpen help. And
Breslow said it the day after they traded for Crochet. He was like, we still want a right-handed bat. And we need additional bullpen help. And that's not even getting into the Aroldis Chapman discussion, where every single left-handed reliever that signed after you paid Aroldis Chapman $10.5 million has been a better deal for a better pitcher and a better person. So that just keeps looking increasingly bad. Like, so now you need a right-handed bat and bullpen help. You have Alex Bregman begging you to come play for the Red Sox, and you're like, ooh, I don't know if we can fit you in there. We only have 30 mil until the luxury tax. And now you're stuck picking from a list of Carlos Estevez, David Robertson, Kenley Jansen, Kyle Finnegan, Jacob Junis, Tommy Kahnle, Andrew Chafin, Colin Poche, Danny Colombe. The number 10 available relieving pitcher is Buck Farmer. Like, this is what you're talking about. This is what you're talking about.
I literally don't know who that is.
It just it doesn't make any sense. Like, you have Ryan Yarbrough, who every time he played the Red Sox when he was on the Rays was throwing BP. Like, this is what you're talking about to solidify the back end of your bullpen. So, like, you're literally just going to go out there and be like, all right, 100-year-old Aroldis Chapman, go ahead, save these games. Liam Hendricks, you haven't pitched in 2 years. Go out and save this one. Garrett Whitlock, we've been jerking you around. Starter, reliever, snip, snap, snip, snap. Like, go out there and give us a 3-inning save. Like, it's, and you want to win 95 games? 95 games in the AL East, and this is what we're trotting out there? Like, give me a break. It's so frustrating, especially when in November it's, we're going to win 95 games, even if it means taking us over that luxury tax. And now we're lower on the luxury tax threshold than they were to start last year, and it doesn't seem like any other move is coming. It's just, it's infuriating.
Yeah, we are so far removed now from the Garrett Crochet trade. The high of the Garrett Crochet trade being like, okay, we missed out on Max Fried, but they pivoted so quickly and got Garrett Crochet. That was an awesome move. But there had to be supplementary moves after the fact. And the later and later we get into this offseason, the less likely those supplementary moves are to come. And it is just so infuriating because you were right there. You were in a great spot. You had a bona fide ace. Then you signed Walker Buehler to, you know, lessen some of that load on Garrett Crochet, who's never had a full season workload. And the risk is there with Buehler, but at least he's a proven guy. Now you have no one on the offensive side. You have no one coming into the bullpen. I don't think they're going, if they give another Aroldis Chapman type contract to Hunter Strickland or Buck Farmer or the other 10 guys on the bottom of that list that I've never fucking heard of. Yeah.
Kenley Jansen is like the most logical guy to come back, and he hates it here and doesn't know anybody's name. Yeah. Like, I just don't know. Like if you're looking at the list, like, he's the guy that I would be like, all right, I guess bring this guy back. Like, he was solid. He started to wear down. Sure, he quit on the team to go join the Dodgers for their World Series run. Like, I'm sure that guy got a ring. He was there so much. Like, he got out of here 2 weeks before the season started and was like, I'm heading to Dodger Stadium. Like, Yeah, I feel like it's weird that he hasn't signed with them yet either. But like, mm-hmm. he seems like out of all these guys, like I'm all set on Carlos Estevez. Like David Robertson, I'm okay on. Like, if all these guys really, I'm okay with. Like, I'm fine being like, all right, that's it. Like, we're good on that. But you're not done. You can't be done. So now you have this incomplete roster and still have Kennedy at Fenway Fest beating the drum of we're going to win 95 games this year. Like, it's kind of similar to what they said last year where Tom Warner was like, we think if we just played even like slightly better defense that we would have won 10 to 15 more games. It's like, well, I don't know what games you're fucking watching then if that's what you think. Like, if we just played slightly better defense, we would have won 10 games. Like, they played terrible defense last year too, and I don't think they're with slightly better defense or 10 wins better. Like, and not, we haven't even gotten into the arbitration stuff with Duran. Like, it just every single move that this Red Sox ownership group in this front office makes. And I don't even necessarily blame Breslow because I don't think it's his fault. Like, he's not the one cutting the checks. Like, he's not mm-hmm. the bread man at the end of the day. Like, he's not sitting there saying, all right, well, I'm willing to give, which I know the report came out earlier in the offseason that it was actually Kennedy and Cora pushing for Bregman, and Breslow was like, oh, let's pump the brakes, which I don't even, like, I don't believe anything that Red Sox ownership says. Like, I believe Cora wants Bregman. I don't believe Sam Kennedy wants Bregman, because if Sam Kennedy wanted Bregman, he would be on the roster by now, because he's a part of that ownership group and we know he has John Henry's ear. So it, and even on the flip side of, let's take that report at its face value. Kennedy and Cora want Bregman. Breslow doesn't. That makes me question what Craig Breslow is doing, because they should have a unified goal of compete for the division every year, 95 wins, and play October baseball, contend for World Series, because we're the Boston Red Sox and we should be. So let's just go ahead and, on the hypothetical that Kennedy and Cora want Bregman, and Breslow is like, I don't think so. Like, I think we can get just as much value out of Christian Campbell and Vaughn Grissom, or I think we could, like, there's so many different ways you could piece this puzzle together, but it just shows that he's disconnected. Like, we talked about, well, at times Heim Bloom didn't understand the feeling in the clubhouse or in the locker room about, well, like, what trading Christian Vasquez does for the morale mm-hmm. of the team. Like, we remember them being in Houston when they traded Vasquez and Bogaerts being like, I don't know what the fuck we're doing. And they kind of turned the underdog quote from Breslow into a rallying cry for, or from Bloom into a rallying cry for the team. So now the big benefit to Breslow was supposed to be, he's been there, he's done it, he knows the grind of the season and knows how important the trade deadline can be in bringing boosts. So if now you have a guy that fits every single need that you supposedly have, veteran leadership, right-handed bat, has versatility across the infield, and you're like, ah, I don't know, like I guess the 6 years, 156, it seems super reasonable, and now that it seems mm-hmm. like it's back on the table, seems like a no-brainer that that's what he's going to do. But for the entirety of the offseason, you could have got him for cheaper than that, and you've just refused to. So it really makes me question the direction that Breslow's heading in now.
Yeah, I agree. It's just so fucking annoying to hear all these rumors come out. And like we've talked about before, I think the Red Sox front office is one of the more leaky in the entire league. I don't know why we always hear these reports of, oh, Sam Kennedy, Cora, and Breslow aren't on the same page or whatever have you. But going off of that, we alluded to the Jaron Duran arbitration, which was also heading towards dumpster fire territory before they figured it out, which is obviously very good, because we talked about, you know, that's not great going into arbitration with a guy who has a bad mental health history and has been shown to be very hard on himself when he's not playing well. To put him in a room with his team, the people who pay his contract, and having them be like, yeah, here's all the reasons why we think you suck and you're not worth this extra $500 million.
$500,000.
Yeah.
It was, they filed at, the Sox filed at 3.5. Duran filed at 4.
Yeah.
And I know when we initially were texting about this, I didn't even consider the mental health aspect of it. You actually brought that up, and I think it's a great point. I mean, we know what Duran's mental health history is, and he's been a champion for mental health rights and stuff. And you know, that very first thing, like, Duran would come in and be like, well, I played 160 games for you last year. I posted every day. And they're going to be like, okay, why didn't you play 162? What happened mm-hmm. there? So it had the potential to get very, very ugly. And for like you were short on leaders, and Alex Cora all offseason or all season was like, this guy's a leader. This is the guy that's the Red Sox. Like, this is who we want our guy to, our guys coming up to be. And I said this when we were talking about outfield logjam, which you still haven't cleared, by the way. Mm-hmm. You still have way too many outfielders for your, for the amount of spots that you have. That when I said I would trade Duran, I got pushback from one of my buddies saying exactly that. Like, when they're talking about a leader on the team, Cora always points to Duran. When you're saying, oh, the Red Sox need a vocal guy, they need someone to step up when Devers doesn't want to, Cora immediately says, well, Jaron, play like Jaron. He hustles. He stretches singles into doubles. He does this. He does that. This is the guy that you're going to fucking jerk around over $500,000. And then, again, Sam Kennedy, the episode punching bag here, comes out at Fenway Fest and says, well, arbitration's a necessary evil. And I do understand that if you give him the $4 million this year, then next year it jumps up higher to like 12 if he has another good year. And then the year after that, it jumps into like 25, or if he keeps going the way he's going. I would argue that taking your best player to a meeting where you tell him all the reasons you think he fucking sucks is not a necessary evil. I would say that it is fucking brain dead. Like, we know the effects that arbitration can have on these players. Corbin Burns got taken to arbitration the year that he won the Cy Young and got told that he was the reason the Brewers missed the playoffs, and then was very vocal about how that completely ruined his relationship with the Brewers.
Yep.
Like, Jeremy Swayman held out and missed the first 3 weeks of training camp because he was hurt that he had to go to arbitration with the Bruins, and they told him all the reasons that he sucks. Like, arbitration is not a necessary evil. It's only a necessary evil if you're cheap.
Yeah, exactly. And it was obviously not a necessary evil because they didn't even go to it. They settled that. What's up?
Part of me wonders how much they saw the backlash and then we're looking at the numbers and we're like, we don't have a fucking chance of winning this hearing. And we're just like, all right, look, because you saw it on Twitter immediately after they came to that agreement, you saw the people carrying water for ownership being like, you idiots thought that they were going to take him to a hearing and they were working on this the whole time. Like, you owe them a big apology. Like,
absolutely.
On what planet do we own? Oh, Fenway Sports Group, an apology. They owe us an apology. Like, the fact that they, like, even if they were working on this behind the scenes, to not get it done before it leaks that you're going to a hearing with one of your best players is, like, just another misstep in a long line of them. Like, so I'm not going to hear the bullshit of you owe them an apology for overreacting to that. Like, no, I absolutely do not, because it's stupid that it even got to that point.
Yeah, no, it was, no doubt in my mind, a reactive response rather than a proactive response. And the final terms of this deal are, at least, I like them a lot. It's $3.85 million for this year. Then you have the club option for next year at $8 million. So, you know, like Zach, you were talking about, if he has another good year and the arbitration goes up.
There are a bunch of MVP escalators in that too. So, like, if he finishes top 20 in MVP voting, he gets another X amount. If he finishes top 10, it goes up, and so on and so forth, up until I think it's an extra $4 million if he wins MVP.
Yeah.
So a bunch of escalators, a lot of money to be made.
Right. And that, ideally saves you from doing this entire song and dance again next offseason. So at least you have that going for you. But the question has to be asked, why wasn't this the deal before we heard all of these rumors that they were going to arbitration? Not even rumors, just reports that they were going to arbitration. Yeah. And if you could have done this beforehand, before you saw the backlash from fans, I don't see why you would have done that. Why you wouldn't have done that.
And it's not like they didn't know that this was going to be the backlash. Like, there's no way that they thought that taking their best player last year to arbitration was going to go over well with the fan base, especially given with the way that the offseason has gone. They did crochet, they got Crochet and have done nothing else. They were in on Soto. They're in on Fried. Supposedly, yep. They were in on Tanner Scott. But even the reports were that the Cubs were the runner-up for Tanner Scott. So you weren't even the runner-up. Like, and I know, at least in my opinion, being runner-up means nothing to me. Like, I don't care. You either land the player or you didn't. But the fact that you weren't even in the mix at the end there, like, and I know a lot of people will say, oh, well, $18 million a year for a lefty closer who's only put together one good season is a lot. Like, I don't care. You're the Boston Red Sox. It's not my money. It's their money. And there's no excuse when, like I said, highest ticket prices in baseball. You're paying $14 for like a 14-ounce beer, $8 for a hot dog. Like, you go into the team store, and if you want a jersey, not even the jersey that the players wear on the field, because they put names on the back of the jerseys that they sell in the team store, $300. Like, it is not a cheap experience to go to Fenway Park. And you have the audacity to tell us that, like, oh, we're going to penny pinch our best player over, even if it's over the course of his entire arbitration span, like an extra like $5 million for the one guy that's worth showing up to the ball park to watch play. Like, give me a break. It is beyond annoying and beyond frustrating. And I was saying this to our new coworker Dan Ball yesterday at work about going to Red Sox games. Like, the best part of the Red Sox sucking is you can go for like $3 because nobody wants to go. So, like, if that's what you're looking forward to, if you're looking forward to like not people like me who are going to go and pay $3, I'm going to go and pay $3 because I love the team and I love going to Fenway, and it pisses me off when they lose and I'd like to see them go win. But you'll have plenty of people filling the park all year who just want to go get drunk and then go hit the bars at Fenway outside. Like, if that's what your atmosphere is going to be at the ballpark, a bunch of people who don't give a fuck about whether the team's winning or losing, but they're going to stand up and sing Sweet Caroline even if they're down 15-0 in the eighth inning, then like, fine. But you're going to lose the fans like us. And I don't know if you have gotten that from that, but I'm like pretty much at my breaking point with this team. I'm not going to believe anything they say again, and eventually it's going to start. Like, I'm always going to watch the games, I'm always going to follow the team just because of the nature of the business that we're in, but you're not going to have those fans follow you through this over and over and over again, especially when you're turning around and calling them liars for using their brains.
And it's just, the track record is getting worse and worse every single offseason. Some new BS comes out about why they're not spending after they promised to spend right after the season ended. That's where we're at this point. There are still I don't know. I feel like I'm an optimistic guy, especially when it comes to the Red Sox, because I've seen what they can do when they actually give a shit. We're at the point where they can still salvage this offseason if they bring in Alex Bregman. I don't think they're bringing in a reliever at this point. If they do, it's probably Hunter Strickland, and that's going to piss me off. But if you bring in Bregman, the offseason's not a failure. It just doesn't seem likely.
I would say at all. The biggest need is that hole that Bregman fills, a right-handed veteran bat that can come in and be a leader. And if they ultimately are bringing him in to play second base and blocking Christian Campbell, then, like, I know it's been pointed out a lot before, and I know we kind of shit on Trevor Story earlier for not posting, but like, he's going to be hurt by May anyways. So like, Christian Campbell's just going to be up. Like, they're going to have to shuffle things around when Story gets hurt anyways. And like, so it is what it is, but I think that that need is way bigger than the bullpen need. Like, I disagree with the Chapman signing, especially seeing what some of these other specifically left-handed relievers have signed for. Like, AJ Minter got 2 years, $22 million from the Mets. So you're getting a better AJ Minter for 2 years at $500,000 more than what you paid shitty person Aroldis Chapman, who might be washed. Yep. Like, every move doesn't make, like, no two moves together make sense. Like, you can say that, like, so you get Crochet, you plug him into the top of your rotation, so then your rotation looks something like Garrett Crochet, Tanner Houck, Brian Bale, Cutter Crawford, Lucas Giolito. Then you add Walker Buehler into the mix. Now you have six. And we've heard Lou Maloney talk a lot about how he doesn't like the six-man rotation idea because it leaves you one arm short in the bullpen. So one guy goes out and gets blown up, and all of a sudden your bullpen's dead for the next however many days. So now you bring in Walker Buehler, you have six. Where's there a move coming in your rotation? And like, sure, you don't want to bank on Giolito having to post 30 starts and 200 innings, but you can't just say like, oh, we're going to figure it out when we get there. Is the move Cutter Crawford to the bullpen? Like, I'd argue that that's not good enough either. Like, how much does his stuff particularly play up in the bullpen? Like, I don't think he's all of a sudden going to be pumping 99.
No,
if he's coming out of the bullpen. Like, I think we saw with Josh Winkowski, his stuff definitely plays up in the bullpen. And even then, he's not very good out there either. So, like, they're every single move aside from one or two have been like, okay, like, we made this move, and now, like, logically, we're going to trade Cutter Crawford.
Right.
He's still here. We made this move, and or like we have Roman Anthony, a number one prospect in baseball, knocking on the doorstep. We have too many outfielders. What's next? Willier Abreu still on the team. Jaron Duran is still on the team. Those were the two logical guys that you would move. Both of those guys still on the team. We don't have any first baseman in the organization ready to step up. Let's trade Tristan Casas. Like, nothing makes sense. Like, I know we got into it in the last episode. Not only are they just trying to get rid of Tristan Casas for whatever, they're like, here's Yoshida's contract with Tristan Casas. How about Luis Castillo? Like, so not only are they trying to move him with no logical replacement, they're trying to salary dump him with no logical replacement. Like, nothing lines up with what this offseason has done. And I do agree with you. There is still a path to salvage it. If you get Bregman, you hang on to Casas, like, things can figure itself out. Like, Cora said it at Fenway Fest when talking about Campbell and Anthony. Rookies are here to help us. They're not here to carry us. Right now, if you don't sign Alex Bregman, you're looking for Christian Campbell or Vaughn Grissom to come in and carry you as the right-handed bat in this lineup. Like, you didn't replace Tyler O'Neill, who I agree had his flaws. He struck out way too much, and it just doesn't fit right with the lineup, who was, I think it was second in baseball last year in strikeouts behind the A's. The Mariners were right up there in that mix too.
Mm.
So they had a clear path to a great offseason, and then they're just going to immediately contradict their own manager, who Sam Kennedy told you, such a great leader and such a great manager, by going out and being like, all right, Christian Campbell, weight of the world on your shoulders. You're the right-handed bat in the heart of the order for the Boston Red Sox. And I believe in Christian Campbell as much as the next guy, but to put that kind of weight on a guy who's never seen major league pitching before, like, it is a massive, massive jump from minor league pitching to major league pitching. Everybody who played the game will tell you that the biggest jump that you make is coming from the minors to the big leagues. The second biggest being going from single A to double A. So, like, this is a guys that we've never seen hit major league pitching. And while I do believe in them to put the weight of the world on their shoulders of being the savior of the Boston Red Sox is unfair to them. And it's unfair to your fans.
Right. Right. And I always go back to the Jackson Holliday comparison here, because you saw him fail at the major league level, and the Orioles didn't need him to be great right away. If you call up Roman Anthony and Christian Campbell, you need them to be good right away, or the season is over before it started, pretty much. And you mentioned not moving on from Abreu or Cutter Crawford at this point. To me, there is still an avenue to a trade like that. Like, I don't know if you saw this. It's probably nothing, but someone DM'd Nolan Arenado on Instagram and was like, hey, like, you should come to Boston. Like, Rafi would move over for you. Obviously, you know, he was probably not expecting a response. But what Arenado said was, I'm down. Which, I mean, I'm not saying that Arenado's trying to force his way here or anything, but I'm saying that that trade avenue is still open whether or not Arenado wants it. I mean, now you kind of see that he does, but the point being, I'm kind of all over the place here, but the point being, you could pretty easily make a trade to salvage this offseason if you got Arenado and Helsley and gave up, like, obviously this is just a pipe dream at this point. I don't know whether the salaries work or whether this is something the Cardinals would want, but you could probably move Cutter Crawford, Abreu, throw in a sweetener or two, and at least get Arenado, probably not both of them. But that's still, I think you get both.
Like, if
you think
if they traded a Willier or Abreu for Nolan Arenado, or even Cutter Crawford, my brain would fucking explode. I would be so angry. Like, there's just no way that that's the best offer you got for a Gold Glove right fielder. Not only is he a Gold Glove right fielder, he's a Gold Glove right fielder at Fenway Park, which we know is the toughest right field to play in the league.
Oh, it's brutal.
So if you're just if you're trading him for a washed up Nolan Arenado with reverse splits, I would be so unbelievably angry with that. And it seems like every single trade proposal or mock trade that involves the Cardinals is the worst trade in the history of baseball. It's like, yeah, Ivan Herrera and Nolan Arenado for Tristan Casas. Like, again, I like Ivan Herrera. I think he's a good catcher. He would fill a need, right-handed bat. He's better defensively than Connor Wong. But if we're trading Tristan Casas for that guy, we're just filling a hole and opening up another one and doing it.
Yeah.
Like, so yeah. I do that. Like, I think a trade that works better. I mean, I think a lot of people don't understand how much teams value the rookie deals and those 6 years of team control that you get when guys first come up. So if you're talking about a deal of Willier Abreu and Cutter Crawford for Arenado and Helsley, who's on an expiring deal, so mm-hmm. that's a guy you're just going to have to pay anyways, and Ivan Herrera, I think that's probably closer to something that gets done, or at least is a little bit more palatable from the Red Sox side of things. It just doesn't seem like – it seems like the Cardinals are viewing Arenado like he was still on the Rockies when they traded for him, where they were getting prime Nolan Arenado. And I know that the money, like the Rockies are eating some of the money, and it doesn't seem like the Cardinals are willing to just eat any money to get a better return. It looks like they're looking to get a return like they're eating money, but the team that they're trading him to assumes the entire contract. Like, I'm pretty much out on trading for Nolan Arenado, unless it's like one of those things where you're really getting Helsley and you're getting Ivan Herrera, or you're getting whoever it may be, and you're also getting Arenado as a throw in. Like, yeah, you guys eat the rest of this contract, just get him off our books. Like, because the Cardinals are desperate to move his money, but have no interest in doing what it takes to actually move his money. So, any move in a vacuum that's only player X for Nolan Arenado, I'm out on. But anything that involves Helsley, Herrera, a guy that can play middle infield, like, I can't imagine they're trading Mason Winn anytime soon, and I'm blanking on the other name who played second base for them, but like Brendan Donovan. He would be a name that is at least a little bit intriguing, but like anything that just involves Nolan Arenado and a straight one-for-one swap, let alone a one-for-one swap that includes a player of value going back to the Cardinals, just I'm completely turned off to that.
Yeah, it was kind of just a random shower thought before we recorded today. I was like, still thinking about the Arenado thing because we haven't really heard any smoke, and it still seems like the Cardinals are going to be moving on from him. Obviously, I think there is still a means to trade with them. It just doesn't seem likely because we haven't heard anything. Maybe that's a good thing because I feel like what's up?
Especially given the report that they promised Devers he would be the starting third baseman for years to come. Like, again, that shit pisses me off too, because Rafael Devers, he doesn't want to be the leader. He doesn't want to be the forward facing, like, member of the team. He doesn't want to be the face of the franchise, but he also doesn't want to move off of third base. So, like, you can't have, like, it, to have, and I do believe Cora when he says Rafael Devers wants to win. That's all he cares about. He just wants to win. He'll play anywhere. But, like, at a certain point, it's time to prove it. Like, you can't have your agent come out and say he's the third baseman. You can't have reports leaking that the team promised him he'd stay at third base. Like, you got your money, you play where the team tells you to play. You can either be the leader on the team, be the face of the franchise, be the guy that doesn't dip out on the media early when things are going wrong, or you can be the guy that sits around and says, I'm the third baseman, I'm here, I'm there. Like, you can't be the, like, I want to win guy, like, and I'll step aside. You can't be both. You can't have it both ways. And it seems like that's kind of what he, and I don't even want to necessarily say that he wants to do, because we haven't even heard this directly from Devers, but like, it just feels like he's unwilling to move off of third base. So like, if you're going to trade for Nolan Arenado under the assumption that that report is right, that Rafael Devers doesn't want to move off of third base, he's been promised that he's the third baseman, that move just makes even less sense. Because so what now? You're going to trade for washed up Nolan Arenado with reverse splits that is like he's only a right-handed bat in the sense that he's in the right-handed batter's box. Like he doesn't actually fix your lineup in terms of bringing balance to it. So you're going to trade, and he's a gold glove third baseman. So you're going to trade for that guy and then trade Tristan Casas and play the gold glove third baseman at first base because you promised your shitty defensive third baseman that he could be your shitty defensive third baseman that is like completely opposed to being any type of leader, any type of face of the franchise, any type of anything, to then leave him at third base. Like it just doesn't make any sense to me. The Arenado stuff has really never made any sense to me.
Yeah, I agree. And at this point, we're probably just beating a dead horse.
Yeah.
Like there wasn't a whole lot to talk about with Red Sox actual reports in the past couple weeks. I think we did a good job of just hashing everything out. That was very therapeutic.
Yeah, it was a good therapy pod just to get lay everything out there and bitch about Sam Kennedy. I know I texted you like 2 weeks ago bitching about Sam Kennedy. So to get it out there and just kind of put all your thoughts on the table and look at the offseason as a whole. And it's so close to being a good offseason. And the logical solution is not only out there, it's begging you to come pay them. Like he's literally sitting there being like, yeah, I'd love to be a Red Sox. And they're like, all right, that's cool. Like y'all be easy. Like, I don't understand it. And people keep saying like, well, in 2017, they played this game of chicken with JD Martinez and it eventually worked out for them. Like, so if it works out again, you got to hand it to the Red Sox. Like you do not under any circumstances gotta hand it to the Red Sox that they have completely cheaped out on this. Like there's no excuse for Bregman not to be wearing a Red Sox uniform by now. At like pretty much for the last month, that's been the case. So like if they ultimately land Bregman on like a 3-year deal on that, like 25, like 3 and 75 with options that can bring it up to 5 and like 130 or whatever it may be, however the deal wants to structure, I still don't think you can be like, oh, well, credit to the Red Sox. They played their hand perfectly on this one. It's completely different from the JD situation because the Red Sox made their offer to JD Martinez early in free agency and then just sat out. And every time he came back, they were like, how about 5 and 120? They didn't even make Bregman an offer until like a week ago. So like, you can't be like, oh, they're playing this game of chicken. Same thing they did with JD Martinez when that's very clearly not what they're doing even a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I don't really have any more Red Sox thoughts, but we did have the Hall of Fame in not induction, but the Hall of Fame voting come out. What was that? 2-3 days ago now?
Yeah, I think it was 2 days ago.
Yeah. So we do have 3 new Hall of Fame inductees, and I have a ballot that I filled out a couple hours ago. Do you have one as well?
I do. Yes.
Okay.
Do you want to give yours?
Okay, yeah. Do you want me to just fire them off?
Yeah, let's hear them.
Okay, so I will admit I think I was probably a bit generous on some of these guys. I did vote all 10 I used all 10 of my votes. So I have Felix Hernandez, Andrew Jones, Dustin Pedroia, Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Jimmy Rollins, CeCe Sabathia, Ichiro, Chase Utley, and Billy Wagner.
I like that one. I don't think that there's like, I think there are some guys that are borderline and I don't know about you, but my theory when it comes to the Hall of Fame is I value peak more than I value longevity I think that anyone can be a compiler, like not to say somebody like Nolan Ryan isn't a Hall of Famer because obviously his peak would qualify him as a Hall of Famer. Like he was at his peak, one of the most dominant pitchers in the game. He obviously pitched for like 30 years. So that just adds to his resume. But I do think there are a lot of guys that just happen to play a long time that have like 3,000 hits. And everyone's like, well, he has 3,000 hits. It took him 35 years to get there. Like, he's a Hall of Famer. And I do think that there needs to be a positional representative from every era in the Hall of Fame. Like, so I know that this second base is going to get brought up a lot as we talk about the late 2000s to the like mid 2010s as all those guys start to enter the ballot with Robinson Cano being the like premier second baseman at the time. But we know that he's going to be disqualified because of steroid use, which I'll get into that too. I don't care about steroid use. You're going to, I know you don't either given your ballot. So We'll get into that. But here's mine. I've got Carlos Beltran, Felix Hernandez, Andrew Jones, Dustin Pedroia, Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, Ichiro, Billy Wagner, and David Wright.
Ooh, okay. Okay. So a couple differences between our ballots.
Yeah, so I'm not unwilling to hear the argument on Chase Utley. I just kind of think that if he gets in, that it weakens Pedroia's argument, because like I said, I think there needs to be a representative from every position for each era. And if you're putting Chase Utley in at second base, then I think you kind of weaken the argument for Pedroia to be in. Although Pedroia's peak was, I think, better than Utley's, obviously winning an MVP, rookie of the year, things like that. The longevity argument favors Utley. And I think with the way that voters are voting right now, that Utley has the edge. So just kind of go against the grain there. I left him off and Pedroia on. Ichiro is the no-brainer. Billy Wagner, I think it's disgraceful that it even got this far. Yep. He's the best lefty reliever of all time. Like I said, steroid guys like Manny and A-Rod are two absolute no-brainers. And
I agree.
The only reason they're not, I think there is something to be said for the repeat offender aspect of A-Rod and Manny, in that they got suspended multiple times, but like at the end of the day, Major League Baseball propped up and promoted steroid users to save the sport. And now when things, like obviously things took a turn, the government started investigating steroid use in baseball, and they were like, what, us? That is disgusting. Like, how dare these cheaters? Like, I think that's just ridiculous. Like, nowhere in their, I saw this on Twitter, nowhere in their suspension did it say you're suspended for X amount of games and also disqualified from being in the Baseball Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
You can't have a comprehensive museum and documentation of the history of baseball if you just pretend like the steroid era didn't exist. Those two are the no-brainer for me. Andrew Jones is an interesting one. I kind of feel like there's like a similar to the Billy Wagner, like faction of people that are parading for him. There's a similar faction of Andrew Jones supporters. We're talking about one of the best defensive center fielders of all time, who, and it's not like he was some random scrub with the bat either. So I have him in there. I don't even know who I didn't cover at this point.
Beltran.
Oh yeah. Beltran, I think, kind of gets a bad rap on things because of the Astros scandal. But like, again, like he did that. Was he a player on that Astros team? No, right?
Yeah, I think he was. And he was like the supposed like captain of that cheating scandal.
Okay. So I kind of feel similarly to steroids as I do the sign stealing stuff. Like,
yeah,
I think every single team in every smart team in the league was doing something similar to what the Astros were doing. Maybe they weren't being as stupid about banging on a trash can when they pick it up, but like we know with the Red Sox stuff in 2018 that they would go in between at bats, they would go down into the replay room and pick up the signs. Like there was nothing in the rules against going to do something like that until after the, so like I don't really see an issue with that. Like I said, like I think it was pretty stupid to be going on trash cans and like banging it. But at the end of the day, I think Beltran's resume as a player, I mean, it kind of leans into both peak and longevity in this argument, that he did it for a long time. And at his peak, he was a Hall of Fame caliber player. I know it kind of screwed him, but I think it was his last year, because then he got the Mets manager job. Uh-huh. Yeah. So then he got the Mets manager job and they were like, oh, never mind, you were a cheater. And like, I don't really care that he was the like quote unquote orchestrator. Like they tried to do that shit with Cora too, that where they were like Alex Cora went behind AJ Hinch's back to do this. Like, okay, well, like he was the manager of the team. Like if something was going on if something was going on in his clubhouse that he didn't approve of, he would have made that clear. And like, especially with all those reports that like Lunau called the like that department the dark arts department, like to blame any one person or player for that, let alone again disqualify them from the Hall of Fame, like take their entire career worth of accomplishments and be like, well, in his last year as a player, he was a part of a team that was cheating from top to bottom. Like they tried to do the, for whatever reason, everybody was a villain in that except for AJ Hinch and Jose Altuve. Like, those were the two guys that were like, I would never do such a thing. Like, coincidentally, Altuve is the face of their franchise, probably the best player in their franchise history. He was the one that was too good to be using the buzzers or using the trash can or anything like that. And Beltran, who's and Hinch, who they were trying to hang on to. So it doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to me to keep any of those guys out.
Yeah, here's my thing with the Beltran situation is it seems like he's the only one who's really still getting flack for this. Like, Cora and Hinch have both moved on now. And with Beltran, the only really reason I didn't put him on or I didn't vote him in this year is I think he will ultimately get in. But I know that the writers are going to make him wait at least like 8 or 9 years, if not the full 10. So I just allocated my votes elsewhere. I do think he is a Hall of Famer. I just didn't put him on for that reason in particular.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And like, I know how some people would use their votes as like, I think this person warrants further evaluation. So I'm going to use a vote on them to make sure that they stay on the ballot. So I do. Mm-hmm. I do like that idea in the voting. The Ichiro thing, there was one voter that didn't vote for him.
I would love to have a chat with that guy.
I just don't, like, to say, like, because I think the unanimous thing is fucking nonsense.
Overblown.
Too. Like only one, like, only certain players deserve to be unanimous Hall of Famers. Like, who gives a shit?
Give
you don't
a
get
break.
A special plaque for being unanimous. And no. The fact that the one unanimous guy is a reliever.
Yeah.
Insane too. Like, obviously not that Mariano Rivera is not a Hall of Famer, but like, you're telling me that like Ken Griffey Jr. isn't a unanimous Hall of Famer. Like,
yeah.
Each year, like, it gets like, you don't get a special, like, your plaque isn't bigger if you're unanimous. Your plaque, like, all the plaques are exactly the same. So I do think it's kind of overblown, and especially to have a voter be like, oh, I don't know, Ichiro might be one of the best pure hitters that we've ever seen, but does he deserve to be a unanimous Hall of Famer? Like, well, then if that's the case, then neither does Mariano Rivera. Or I'm going to use this, Ken Griffey Jr., any of these guys, like, is Albert Pujols going to be a unanimous Hall of Famer? Miguel Cabrera, like, it's a ridiculous argument. Like, these are guys that are Hall, like, you look at the ballot and you go, okay, well, Ichiro's in. Like, if it's somebody that's that obvious to be like, well, I don't think they deserve the distinct honor of being like, that's why the Hall of Fame is treated as a joke, because we don't have steroid guys in. But also on the flip side, we say like, well, like, it's a distinct honor to be a unanimous, like, come on, dude. Like, what is your argument other than that fucking ridiculous, like, grandstanding, like, is he unanimous? Like, no, like, Ichiro Suzuki's a Hall of Famer. You know it when you see it. Like, there are plenty of guys like that. Like Scherzer, Verlander, Clayton Kershaw. Like, these are guys that you're going to look at the ballot and be like, okay, well, there's three right there that automatically get in. I mentioned Pujols and Cabrera. Like, there are plenty of guys that you look at on a ballot and say, that's a Hall of Famer. And I know things get pretty bleak here looking at the new names coming up, so it's going to open the door for some more consideration for some of these guys. But I think, like, at the bare minimum, when you look at the ballot and be like, oh, here's player X, that's a Hall of Famer, then you should just vote for them. It shouldn't be like you shouldn't be a 70-year-old dinosaur being like, well, if Honus Wagner wasn't a unanimous Hall of Famer, then why is Ichiro Suzuki? Like, it's so stupid.
I have one hypothesis on why he was not unanimous, and I don't know if this has any merit or not, but do you remember when Ichiro got his 3,000th hit and people were like, oh, he's the new hit king because he had so many hits in the Japanese league, and people were like, oh, now you're trying to discredit Pete Rose and all that. Do you think that has any thing to do with this? Like, I wonder if some of those dinosaur voters are still butthurt about that.
I can't imagine so, because, well, first of all, it's the National Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
It's not the Major League Baseball Hall of Fame. It's not the American Baseball Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Baseball Hall of Fame. That should include baseball. Like,
yeah,
Ichiro's like, I don't necessarily think Ichiro's the hit king because he had X amount of hits in Japan.
Yeah,
I think that's foolish. But like, so say you take out his thousand, however many hits in Japan, mm-hmm. and he's got 3,000 major league hits over the course of however many years, becoming the face of baseball in Seattle,
yeah.
being really the first major Japanese player to come over and be an absolute superstar
yep.
in Major League Baseball. So like, even if you don't look at him as the hit king, because however many of those hits came in Japan, like, you still look at him and say, that's a Hall of Famer. Like, I don't think those hits make him or break him as a Hall of Famer. So
I agree.
I understand the argument. I literally just think it was like some like 90-year-old being like, well, if Ted Williams wasn't a unanimous Hall of Famer, then neither is Ichiro. Like,
yeah.
We know that the writers do shit like that, and that's why they make like, oh, well, Curt Schilling's not a Hall of Famer. And like, I know it's not apples to oranges, because Curt Schilling's a character clause guy as opposed to somebody like Bonds or Clemens, who are steroid guys. Like, I understand why that, like, and Schilling doesn't do anything to help himself saying
no.
that, like, you should hang journalists or anything like that. But like there's too much outside. Like, it's not the good guy Hall of Fame. It's the baseball Hall of Fame. If we're going to revisionist history and say steroid users aren't in, people with questionable, possibly Nazi collections don't get in, like,
yeah,
you don't get in if you say that you want to hang a journalist, or like all those things are disqualifying for the good person Hall of Fame. I don't think they should be disqualifying for the baseball Hall of Fame, especially when you consider the history of the sport, where it was a white person only sport until the 40s, and not only that, you had active Klansmen playing in the league that are in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Like
Honus Wagner, Rogers Hornsby. I know that supposedly the Ty Cobb, like, I know there's a story about Ty Cobb beating up a black person for, like, looking at him in an elevator or something. I've heard that might be, like, an old wise tale, and that Ty Cobb actually wasn't a part of that group. But, like, take him aside, like, you have actual, like, you had card-carrying Klansmen in Major League Baseball in the 1910s, and they're all in the Hall of Fame, but now we're going to draw the line at the greatest power hitter in the history of the sport, or in Barry Bonds, or Roger Clemens, who had two separate Hall of Fame careers.
Oh, yeah.
Because they used steroids when the league promoted it. Like, there's too much of, like, baseball's biggest issue, I think we've seen in them trying to grow the game and them trying to attract younger fans, is that they're holier than thou. Like, there's nobody more sanctimonious and I'm better than you than, like, an old school baseball fan, a back in my day baseball fan.
Like, yep.
That's why they fail to attract younger audiences. That's why people look at the Hall of Fame and say it's a joke, because the greatest player of all time isn't in the Hall of Fame. Like, there's so much work to be done on the Hall of Fame. And, like, every year, the fact that Manny Ramirez, Alex Rodriguez, like, those are two guys. I said it. Like, when you look at the ballot and say, who are the surefire Hall of Famers? When you look at this ballot, the surefire Hall of Famers to me are Ichiro, who we mentioned, Manny, and A-Rod. Like, those are three guys that should be a no-brainer. And Manny and A-Rod aren't going to get in.
No, I don't think so either. I had one more question for you. Did you not put CC Sabathia on your ballot?
So I had him on there. And when I read it, I didn't have him on here. I initially had him on there, and then I kind of took a deep dive into the stats, and I, like, I don't know. I don't really see it. Like, it's a little bit hypocritical, too, because at his peak, I think he was probably a Hall of Famer. And I know I just went on this whole rant of, like, oh, if you look at it and say that's a Hall of Famer, then, like, yeah. Like, I do think there's something to be said about being a first ballot Hall of Famer.
Yes.
And, like, Sabathia to me is a guy that, like, when I looked at the list, like I told you, I said I saw three surefire Hall of Famers on there. And Felix Hernandez is another one, like, where I think ultimately they're Hall of Famers, but right. like, should you be like, people do take too much stock into the unanimous thing and don't put enough stock into the first ballot thing. Like,
agreed.
I think the first ballot guy should be the Ichiros, should be the like David Ortiz, who revolutionized the position, like guys like that, as opposed to Sabathia, who I do think ultimately is a Hall of Famer and his peak warrants that, but he's not a guy that you look at and go like, oh yeah, like we're watching a Hall of Famer work right now.
I agree. I was a little surprised that he was first ballot, to be honest. I don't know if we even mentioned that the three who actually got in were CeCe Sabathia, Ichiro Suzuki, and Billy Wagner.
Yeah, I career on Sabathia, career ERA of 3.74, 251 wins, which like I think wins are pretty overblown now because I don't think you're ever going to see somebody get like 300 wins or like be up there in like the pantheon of wins because guys just don't pitch as much and pitch deeper into games anymore. I'm trying to pull it up here now too. Those Hall of Fame metrics that Baseball Reference does. I'm glad Billy Wagner got in because that's been a guy that I've been beating the drum of for a while. And like, I don't think that it should just be like, well, relievers don't pitch as much, so they're not as valuable. Like the only relievers that should be in the Hall of Fame are Mariano Rivera and Trevor Hoffman. Like, I think that discredits everything that I was talking about pretty much with the Hall of Fame in that it should be a comprehensive history of baseball. Like, can you tell the history of baseball without closers?
No.
Like, can you tell the history of baseball without Raleigh Fingers or Dennis Eckersley or Billy Wagner or any of these really elite relievers? Like, that's why I think Papelbon probably would have warranted a stronger look. Like, guys like that, I mean, like, Papelbon is maybe not the best example. He was just the first one that came to mind because he didn't have the longevity. Like, I do think longevity matters as a reliever when you're not pitching as much.
Yeah.
But like a guy like Billy Wagner, who sits on the ballot for 10 years and every single year, there's the same song and dance of, well, he's the greatest lefty reliever of all time, but he only did it one inning at a time. Like,
that's
okay, cool.
Such
like,
BS.
He posted a zero for one inning at a time, like over and over and over again. Like, I just don't understand the like not necessarily like holier than thou attitude of the nitpicking of it. Like,
why
I understand the saves record is the saves record and Rivera has that, but like, why is like, oh, well, Billy Wagner's like number 9 on the saves list. Like, is that a Hall of Famer? Like, it just, that kind of stuff just doesn't make sense to me.
I agree. Did you have anything else on the Hall of Fame?
Have you seen the names that are being added next year?
I saw Ryan Braun. Do you have the list in front of you?
Let me pull it up right here.
I know it was Ryan Braun who is.
Yeah, Rick Porcello is on there.
Oh boy.
All right. So here are the notable first time Hall of Fame candidates. Braun, Shinsu, Edwin Encarnacion, Gio Gonzalez, Alex Gordon, Cole Hamels, Matt Kemp, Howie Kendrick, Nick Markakis, Daniel Murphy, Hunter Pence, Rick Porcello, and Neil Walker.
So none of them are getting in.
I don't think there's a single Hall of Famer there.
No. That is tough.
It is a bad list, a real bad list. Like, when you're saying notable first-time Hall of Fame candidates and you've got Neil Walker on the list, like, what is Neil Walker going to pull at next year? Less than 1%. Like, is anybody gonna vote for Neil Walker?
No, I wouldn't. I mean,
no, I
if anyone does,
it.
They're a Pirates fan.
Like, and ultimately, I had this conversation with a couple of my buddies the other day talking about this list. Like, I think ultimately Cole Hamels is a guy that deserves some further consideration, given the strong peak that he had. Matt Kemp was one that somebody threw around. Like, it to me, that's where the argument gets tricky with the peak argument, because at his peak Matt Kemp was an MVP caliber player, but he only did it for like 2 years. Like, I do think there needs to be a certain element of, okay, like, yes, he's like, his peak was a Hall of Fame caliber peak, but it was a 1 year peak. Like, so there, it's tricky to toe the line of the peak and longevity argument. I think that'll be a good test to see where, because we know some of these younger voters take that peak more seriously or consider that more heavily than they do longevity. It'll be interesting to see how long Kemp sticks around on the ballot. I assume he'll poll at higher or like right around that 5% mark to stay on.
Yeah. So
he's one that'll be interesting for me.
Yeah, I kind of loop in Kemp with like a Carlos Gonzalez, a Troy Tulowitzki, those types of guys who, when we were growing up, were big names and then just fell off a cliff.
Yeah, yeah, I completely agree there. And injuries had a lot to do with it. I remember Matt Kemp won that MVP, started dating Rihanna, and then just like fell off a cliff, which was funny.
Man, he was on top of the world for,
yeah, for he that really had short it all stretch. Then.
Yeah. Yeah, did you have anything else? I think we did a pretty extensive episode for not having a lot of stuff to talk about.
Yeah, the Red Sox didn't make a, well, I guess they made a couple like peripheral moves. They got Blake Sable from the Giants.
Yeah.
They signed Mark Kolesvasli, or what, I don't know how to say his last name. He was with the Paw Sox last year. He's he's back on a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. We lost Bobby Dalbec to the White Sox as a minor league free agent with an invite to camp. I think he's going to make the team there. I'm rooting
probably
for Bob.
Me too.
Yeah, not a whole lot happened, but I think in a not a whole lot happening, it led to a lot of controversy, and maybe not controversy, but a lot of high tensions on Red Sox Twitter, because we're hearing in out of one side of ownership's mouth that they want to win 95 games and compete for the division. And then you look around up and down the lineup and you're like, how is this team going to win 95 games? And you look at where their holes are. And I know we said it, but there's a guy out there begging you to be on the Red Sox that fills all the holes that you're looking to fill. And you just seemingly don't have any interest in bringing him on or like having him be a part of what you're trying to build. So it's not a lot actually happened, but I think there was a good amount to kind of break down and talk about, and especially rant about.
Yes, I agree. The rants were much needed. How about we end with one thing? What is your percentage at that Bregman is a Red Sox?
0.0.
Okay, I'm gonna go like 7%.
Yeah, that's,
I don't know if that's too low, too high.
That feels a little high, in my opinion.
At this point, I mean, things could change overnight. It's not looking likely. But as always, this was a ton of fun. Thank you for listening. And we'll check in soon, hopefully with some better news.